Happy Monday, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome inside our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. Happy to be with you on this Monday, September 21st. And at least, you know, it's a little smoky out there, but at least it waited until Monday to come back. You know, we got to enjoy a nice clear weekend. But happy to have you along with me on this Monday. What a weekend. NFL, NBA playoffs, the Stanley Cup final began. The U.S. Open happened. We had NASCAR playoffs. There was a lot going on over the weekend. And we will talk, obviously, a lot of NFL coming up. Recap the day yesterday. Take a look towards Monday Night Football. And we'll talk U.S. Open and NASCAR on tomorrow's show. Because I wanted to talk NBA and NHL here at the start of the show. What a fun start for the Western Conference Finals. I mean, no surprise. I think the Lakers up 2-0 right now, but a bit of a different game two to the game one that we had on Friday in this series between the Lakers and the Nuggets. And Denver did not do a bad job in the first half. You know, they really hung in there against LA. They actually had a 2-point lead at the end of the first quarter, and then the last probably 5 minutes of that second quarter, the Lakers just started putting together some nice fast break points and baskets, and we were able to build a little bit of a lead. And then in the third and fourth quarter, really just, made some more good runs, but either matched Denver or, was able to put a nice run together to kind of enhance that lead. But really, again, a solid performance from Denver. This is a team that, again, having to fight back from those playoff deficits and then stepping up in game one against a team like the Lakers, that is no easy task. So the fact that Denver was able to do that and come back with a better game too as well. I mean, the Lakers didn't have to go to a seventh game, didn't have to come back from a second 3-1 series deficit in their second round series. So the fact that Denver had that, only had a couple days off, and then was able to have the first half that they did, they showed something there. And L.A. showed something, too, in the second half, being able to really pull away. And it was alley-oop central for L.A. in that first game. I mean, they must have had at least 8, maybe 10 alley-oops throughout that game, mostly coming from Rajon Rondo. But LeBron James even threw up a couple alley-oops as well throughout that game. So the offense was kind of engaging in that showtime mode that the Lakers have had over the years. But my gosh, a great performance there from overall. I think a really strong performance from both teams. Again, Denver just got kind of outmanned there towards the end of the game. But I think Denver showed some good fight in the first half of that game and had some good stretches there in the second half of game one. And just continue to, again, show that fight that we've seen all postseason. And even though the Denver Nuggets playoff record against the Lakers hasn't improved all that much, they were 7-22 after the loss in Game 1. They're now 7-23 after losing Game 2. Another strong performance from Michael Porter Jr. had 14 points. Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic are the only three Denver Nuggets that have been in double digits for both games in this series. No surprise to see that from Murray or Jokic. Those are the two guys that have really carried this team throughout this postseason run. But Michael Porter Jr., when he's been on, when he's been able to be a solid contributor for this team, he does give them a nice dimension. And he hits some big shots in both of these first two games. And so to see him be able to be that kind of contributor, it does give Denver a nice look. And the fact that he's been able to not necessarily keep pace with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, but been kind of that reliable third guy to get into double digits, I think is big for Denver. So if he can continue to do that and they get one or two other guys that can step up, maybe just one other guy that can step up in each game, they give themselves a better chance. Because game two was an overall better team effort in terms of where Denver was at throughout that game, because they had a bit of a rougher first half in game two, but that fight we've seen from Denver all postseason long came back and allowed them to fight back into that second half of game two and make it a real interesting contest. And we'll get to a little bit of game two here in just a second. But talking about Rajon Rondo throwing up those alley-oops throughout game one for the LA Lakers. He had 9 assists in the first game, which at the time gave him 1,025 assists in the playoffs, which got him past Michael Jordan for 10th on the NBA career list. Michael Jordan with 1,022. So Rajon Rondo, again, the eyesight, the way he can help that offense flow, makes a huge difference. Not that they were struggling that much in the postseason without him, but that's just an extra dimension that Rajon Rondo gives them. And just so effortless, too, with a lot of those alley-oops, just throwing them up. Really nice performance there from him. And then how good must the big men feel for Los Angeles? After having the Houston Rockets in their conference semifinal series, I mean, Anthony Davis got the more playing time out of any of them, but JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, I mean, they got absolutely pretty much no playing time in that game against Houston. Dwight Howard sat out for 3 games of that Rockets series and only played 4.5 minutes in the last 4 games against the Rockets. So for him to have had the minutes he's had so far in this series, he has to feel extremely rejuvenated and fresh and ready to go, and he showed that. I mean, he had one of those alley-oop dunks as well, and I thought he was going to break the rim. But, I mean, he has to be feeling great, I imagine a lot of those big guys do, getting more playing time right now for the Lakers. But, honestly, Nikola Jokic, I don't think is backing down at all. I think in Game 1, it was an adjustment for him. But watching him in Game 2, he had no problem lowering his shoulder and making his way to the rim, whether it was Anthony Davis or Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, whoever it was. He was not afraid to go towards the rim, and Denver's going to have success if Nikola Jokic can continue to be in that mindset. And for him to be able to lower his shoulder into the chest of Anthony Davis and work his way towards the rim, I think is a great sign for Denver throughout this series. And, you know, because that battle in the paint is going to rely on Nikola Jokic and how good he is on first chance and second chance opportunities. And he's done a great job. He did a great job adjusting in game 2 to that physicality. And he made some big shots, not just on the inside the paint, but also on the outside too. He hit some big 3-pointers in the first 2 games of this series as well. But the Lakers, a strong game 1 performance, another strong game 2 performance as well, getting off to a bit of a better start. Had a 8-point lead at the end of the first quarter in game 2, did the Lakers, and kind of rode that momentum through the second quarter as well. But it was a second half that, although it wasn't dominated by Denver, was won by Denver. The Nuggets outscored the Lakers by 8 points there in the second quarter, or in the second half, which essentially makes up for the first quarter deficit, which leaves that bucket there that the Lakers got in the second quarter very important in terms of where this game was late. And what a comeback again. Talked about that fight from Denver. Late in the fourth quarter, Lakers have a 192 lead, and it looks like they're going to be able to control this to the end. And Denver just storms back. I believe they take the 1-point lead, 101-100, and then it just goes back and forth between the two. And then finally, Anthony Davis with that buzzer-beating 3-pointer. And what a shot as well. Silky smooth there from the wing beyond the 3-point line. But what a game. Again, Denver with that fight, making some good adjustments, getting some more good play from Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. Again, the physicality of Jokic really stood out to me as the difference in game 2 between game 1 for Denver. Because, I mean, Jamal Murray had 25 points in game 2 of this series after having, I believe, 21 points. Yeah, 21 points in game 1. So he's been a solid contributor. Jokic also had 21 points in game 1, 30 points in game 2. Talked about Michael Porter Jr. and his double-digit effort. So Denver has these guys, these players that can step up and be those leaders as they have this whole postseason. The thing is, though, you have a Lakers team that's getting just as much from about double that amount of players. I mean, obviously, LeBron James and Anthony Davis leading the way, but Rondo giving him some good minutes and some good points. Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, Dwight Howard, these guys that continue to step up in different roles each game, and it's just hard to match that. And while I think Denver got some good fight there in game 2, I think these games can be close down the stretch of this series, but it doesn't feel like... It feels like every game the Clippers and Nuggets had there towards the end of the season in reverse, or towards the end of the series in reverse. Clippers would always get out to this hot, strong start and fall apart in the end, where Lakers, I mean, in game 2, the Lakers did not get off to a good start. If it wasn't for LeBron James, they might not even come close to having the 29 points they had in the first quarter. I mean, most of that came from LeBron. I think they were 2 of 11 in their first 11 shots from the field. I mean, it was not a pretty shooting start for the Lakers, but they continue just to build into it. And as they get deeper into a game, we saw it in game one where they were just able to continue to pile it on to the Denver Nuggets and continue, you know, getting points from pretty much everyone on the floor. Game two, a little bit different, but again, not as strong of a start, stronger than game one, but not as strong of a start, but a great finish from LA. Little sloppy with Denver making that run when they were down by eight, but for the most part, I thought it was a strong finish from the Lakers, which we just did not see from the Clippers. And that's what happens. Denver just continues to hang around, and they scrap away, they fight, and they just look for every little opportunity. If you can take those away, you can win. Utah and the Clippers down the stretch did not take away those little opportunities that pull the momentum back towards the Denver Nuggets side. The Lakers are able to do that in game one and game two, hence the reason why they're up 2-0. But I think Denver made some great adjustments there in game two. I'm excited to see what happens in game three on Wednesday. Game three on Tuesday. No NBA game tonight, but game three of that Western Final will be on Tuesday, and I'm excited to see what adjustments Denver makes again. And hopefully we get a game very close to the quality of game two where it comes down to the last shot. Because when you come down to the final four teams in any playoff, that's the way the game should be. So looking forward to game three. Hats off, really, I think, to the Nuggets. They deserve some credit for the way they've played so far. And we'll see if they can get back into this series in game three like Boston was able to do. Miami with that 2-0 series lead going into game three of that series on Saturday. And Boston had a tremendous game in game three. Opened it up with a strong first quarter. They had a close to a 10-point lead after the first quarter. A little bit of fight back from Miami. But Boston just took those chances in the second half and just never let Miami truly get going. They made some small good runs here and there. But Boston, for the most part, did a great job of just stopping Miami from getting overly confident and on too much of a hot streak throughout that game. And really, I mean, just some emphatic play from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Kemba Walker, I think, had one of his better games this series and possibly this postseason. But a strong performance there from Boston, what I thought was a must-win game for them. They could not go down 3-0 in a series against Miami just because it's happened so few times in Boston Celtics history. I mean, this is the 124th playoff series in Boston history, in Celtics history, and the Celtics have trailed 3-0 in only 7 of them. So there's not a whole lot to pull off of there if you're the Celtics, and especially with just how much they've struggled at times in this playoffs. I mean, think about that series against Toronto. I mean, if that frustration level gets too high, I mean, we saw it with Toronto. We've seen it in game two with Miami. Boston tends to get a little too sloppy, and they can fall apart. So I think the fact they kept a cool head in game three, they got some of that passion off their chest in the locker room after game two. It seemed to put them in a better place mentally coming into the start of game three. And that was a solid game from Boston. So they avoided going down 3-0 for the 8th time in their playoff history. And now this series, I feel like, has new life for Boston. And game four, again, I'm not going to call it a must win for Boston, but to tie this series up 2-2 after having that kind of solid game three performance, I think would do Boston a lot better than having to fight back from 3-0. This is a game where they kept Miami from taking the lead at all. So I think to build on that with another win, tie the series up 2-2 would be the best move for Boston. They just continue to do that the way they did in this game, attack the paint. And they had a lot of great drives to the rim, a lot of great finishes at the rim. And, I mean, they just were getting points from all over. Mid-range, Jaylen Brown had some nice mid-range shots throughout that game. So if they can just continue to get the points, I mean, from anywhere on the floor like they were, because that's how talented this Boston team is. They can get points from wherever and from whoever. But they just got to keep a level head. I feel like they did that in game three. They're able to get the big win, 117-106. And Gordon Hayward, I think, got 31 minutes in this game, so he played well. He didn't look overly explosive, but he was able to just to give Boston a little extra something, had 6 points in the game. But good to see him out there. Again, hopefully he can have some good luck now with Boston, actually have some time to show them what he can do and continue to help out that offense, because he has just had some horrible luck with that team. But good to see Gordon Hayward out there for Boston. And even with the loss, Miami talked about the great postseason with their record so far. They matched the best 12-game start in team history to any postseason, being 10-2. They started that way also in 2005, 12, and 13. So we'll see if they can make this another championship run. They still have the 2-1 series lead there. But like I said, Miami never led in this game, which makes this the first time that's happened in the team's last 70 games. The only other time that's happened this season where Miami doesn't hold a lead was November 23rd against the 76ers. Otherwise, Miami has had a lead at some point in every game since then, but Boston able to keep them from having that lead in Game 3. But a strong performance there from Boston now going into this kind of extended break for them as they kind of allow the Western Conference series to catch up with Western Conference Game 3 happening tomorrow. That means that both series would then be between three or would be through three games, and they essentially pick up the pace and go every other day every day with one game from each conference moving forward until we get to the NBA Finals. But it'll be interesting to see how Boston comes off that. I mean, they have such a passionate kind of group conversation after Game 2, have that great Game 3. Now a little bit of a break off. Is that going to throw that kind of rhythm off? Or is it going to give them a chance to maybe talk it out a little bit more and put themselves in a solid position? I'll be interested to see that. Also, how does Miami bounce back from just their second loss this postseason? And do they come out more aggressive? Do they kind of just – I mean, again, not a bad performance from Miami. I mean, Tyler Hero with 22 points, that kid just continues to show up and show out. But I believe all Miami starters in the game on Saturday – reached double digits, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not mistaken. All five starters there for Miami reached double digits in that game. 27 from Adebayo, who led the way, but Butler then was 17 as the two top scorers in terms of the starters. But Tyler Hero again with 22 points coming off the bench. So not a bad performance from Miami, just a better performance from Boston than they've had in the first two games in terms of starting a game and closing a game out. So we'll see how this extended break could affect that. But again, no NBA playoff games today. The season or the schedule picks back up tomorrow with Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. However, we do have Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final going down today after Game 1 went to Dallas 4-1 over Tampa Bay. Again, Dallas, not a team known for their offense in the regular season, but in their series against Colorado and this series in Game 1 against Tampa Bay, showing that they have some real offensive threat to them. I mean, really, it's been defense that they've built through, and they had some great defense against Tampa Bay. But their offense has really seemed to find a nice rhythm throughout these playoffs. And, again, a strong start. I mean, just about 5 minutes in, Hanley gets his first goal of the postseason after a strong forechecking there from Joel Cervantes, which allowed Dallas to get the puck back, and then a great assist by Hintz. It was his 10th assist of the postseason, but Hanley then gets his first goal of his NHL career to put Dallas up 1-0. What a time to score your first goal in the Stanley Cup Final. But Hanley gets his first goal of the postseason. He goes, puts Dallas up 1-0. Yanni Gourde then with the skate in the right place at the right time. You can't kick the puck in, but if it ricochets off your skate, that's a good goal. And Yanni Gourde able to get his skate in the right position to deflect that puck into the net to tie Tampa Bay up 1-1. And in the second period, really dominated by Dallas. They were, again, strong defense, some good back-and-forth opportunities, but Dallas, more of the offensive chances. Jamie Oleksiak with his fifth goal of the postseason after Vasilevskiy did make a strong save on Oleksiak's first shot opportunity of that possession. Oleksiak able to wrangle the puck. Vasilevskiy did not see it right away. And Oleksiak able to bury of the net to give Dallas a 2-1 win. And then Joel Cervantes, after having a nice forecheck in the first period that led to the opening goal from Dallas, gets rewarded towards the end of the second period, gets the puck right at the top of the slot, and just able to put a solid shot in on Vasilevskiy, who could not save it, and put Dallas up 3-1. Vasilevskiy allowing 3 goals on 19 shots faced. So definitely a bit of an off game there from Vasilevskiy. Although, like I said, Dallas's offense, while it hasn't been on every single game and really wasn't there a lot of the regular season. They had performances like these where they need to find a goal, they're finding it. And Joel Cervantes, you know, has had some big goals in this postseason so far for Dallas. That one essentially put the game out of reach for Tampa Bay, although that was at towards the end of the second period. And Tampa Bay really dominated the third period. I mean, Tampa Bay, if you look at the team stats, they had 16 more shots than Dallas. They had a 6 more hits than Dallas. The Stars only had a slight edge in the faceoff circle, 24-23. So really, Tampa Bay held their own throughout this game. Dallas just made better of the opportunities they had, and Tampa Bay had some tough shots rattle off the post that could have changed the game. But they did a great job, Tampa Bay did, in that third period with getting pressure on Khudobin there in goal, making Dallas really play some of that tough defense that they had been playing all season long. And Dallas had some good defense, but Khudobin made some incredible saves there in that third period. And then finally, Jason Dickinson there in the third period got an empty netter for his first goal of the postseason, but that put Dallas up 4-1. And that was the final score as the Stars win game one. They go up 1-0 in the series. Game two goes off today. And, I mean, if you're Dallas, continue with pretty much what you're doing. You know Tampa Bay is going to come back with a little more bite to them, because Tampa Bay in those first two periods of game one looked like a team that was not as fresh as Dallas. But in the third period, they found that extra gear like they do. Again, I think they were just too worn down from the previous series going seven games and those first two periods where they just weren't able to convert on the chances that they usually do. But now they're going to have an extra day. Now they're going to be rested up. And they're going to come back with a little more bite. I think Dallas knows that. So they've got to keep up their defense, keep up the goaltending there with Anton Khudobin, who's doing a fantastic job for Dallas throughout these playoffs. So if they can get that to stay the same, they continue with that sparkling defense that they've played in game one. And this could be a series or a game dominated by Dallas. But I think Tampa Bay is going to come out extremely aggressive in game one, look to get the early lead, and look to just continue to bear down on Anton Khudobin. They're going to need a better performance as well from Vasilevsky in goal. You can't allow 3 shots on 19 attempts on a Stanley Final appearance. It's just not good enough to win the Cup. So I think Tampa Bay needs some better goaltending from Vasilevsky. They're going to need to capitalize on a few more of those offensive opportunities and hope that they can kind of break through that tough Dallas defense when they need to. Otherwise, if the Stars do what they did and get like they did in game one, really kind of throughout the regular season, which is build up from that defense and allow that to lead into their offense and offensive chances, then game one is just the start of a Dallas Cup victory here. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in game two. That goes off at 5 o'clock tonight is when the puck will drop. And we'll see if Dallas takes a 2-0 lead or if Tampa Bay can come back and tie the series up to, a game apiece. Just a fun fact about teams that go up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Final. They have won, gone on to win the series 46 of 51 times. So I'm not going to call this a must-win for Tampa Bay, but based on that stat, it very well could be. But again, that game goes off at 5 o'clock, game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. But that's what went down with NBA and NHL this weekend. When we come back, it was another fun Sunday in the NFL as week 2 gets ready to come to a close with Monday Night Football tonight. We will take a look at yesterday's action from the world of the NFL coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, the storyline for week 2 was injuries. My gosh, it seemed like whenever you turned around, there was another update or alert about somebody that went down with an injury. Maybe nobody more hurt in terms of sheer numbers than the 49ers. But in terms of quality lost, I mean, can you argue that Saquon Barkley is maybe the biggest loss of this week, maybe this season? I mean, that is essentially the Giants' season gone this year. And with the way the NFC East was looking, I mean, nowhere near impressed with Philadelphia. Not overly impressed with Dallas, although that comeback against Atlanta was pretty dang special. But still, Did not expect them to be in that kind of situation. I mean, are the Falcons better than we thought? I can't get a read on Atlanta right now because they have a solid game at home against Seattle. I mean, the Seahawks are one of the better teams in the NFL this year. They've shown that through 2 weeks. They got a little lucky last night, but nonetheless, Russell Wilson's had two great performances. And is Atlanta better than what we thought? Because they had a good game against Seattle. They go into Dallas and essentially, I mean, they blew what was a 20-point lead. I mean, they had a 20-point lead, a 15-point lead, I think a 19-point lead throughout that game. With the Dallas Cowboys, because they were up 20-0 after the first quarter. They had a 29-10 lead at halftime, so that's a 19-point lead there. Then they had a, 36-24 lead at the start of the, 36-24 right as they got into the fourth quarter. So at that point, it was a 12-point lead, so essentially three double-digit leads kind of lost throughout this game for Atlanta, which makes you just kind of wonder how good they are. But I still think it was a strong game from Dallas. But what a Sunday. Let's get into the morning games a little bit more here. Because like I said, Giants and Bears, we had a couple leads that were blown, a couple leads that were almost blown. This was one of those almost blown leads after a relatively solid first half from the Chicago Bears. David Montgomery with a nice 28-yard catch from Trubisky to get them on the board. Cairo Santos hit a 34-yard field goal. Darnell Mooney got another 15-yard pass from Trubisky. So again, kind of picking up where he left off. Did Trubisky from that game one comeback win against Detroit. Had a fantastic fourth quarter in that game before having a nice first half against the Giants. And then New York just kind of chipped away there throughout the second half. Again, 17-3, 17-10, then 17-13 with just over 7.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So the Giants were giving themselves a chance, but just that gut punch of losing Saquon Barkley. No real way to describe that for the Giants. I mean, I was thinking that if they got into a rhythm, if Daniel Jones continues to get, you know, if he continues to improve throughout this season, they have Barkley back there as that strong runner. The way the NFC East is looking, maybe the Giants are able to make a run at that division. But now without Saquon Barkley, I mean, not to say that they still couldn't, the way that the NFC East has been very underwhelming in these first 2 weeks. But that really does just kind of crush, I feel like, the season of the New York Giants this year. But a strong comeback attempt from them. The Bears, 2-0 now for the first time, or for the fifth time since 1993. So in a better spot than what they're usually used to through two games, right up there with Green Bay as the two 2-0 teams in the NFC North. But still, a solid game for Mitchell Trubisky. Nothing that I'm, again, jumping at. With that comeback win against Detroit in the first half that he played against the Giants. You know, he's I think, playing some of his better football. Still had two interceptions, though, against the New York Giants this week. But, again, I think it's been a little bit of better play from Trubisky. And if he can continue that, because it's going to take this whole season for him to win back the fans of Chicago. For the fans that he's lost, it's going to take a whole season of this kind of play, being able to lead your team to victories, whether it was a comeback victory or a victory like this where you're just trying to survive a hotter team. I mean, the Giants had some good chances there at the end. The Bears defense, though, again, stepping up and making some plays down the stretch. But better play from Trubisky, but not play that I'm still, you know, overly impressed by. Week one was a nice comeback, but we're going to have to see how the season continues to play out for him to see if you know, it's really going to be, if he's really going to be the true future of this franchise. But as of right now, a better start than I expected from him in Chicago. And then we, again, touched on the Dallas-Atlanta game. What a comeback for the Cowboys. I mean, down 20-0 after the first quarter. I thought that, I mean, I was blown away by it. I did not expect Atlanta to come out and have that kind of a first half, let alone a first quarter against the Dallas Cowboys at home. And they had 20,000 fans there in Dallas. I figure with that kind of home support and this kind of a season where teams are lucky to have any kind of fan presence at their stadium, I thought that was going to be kind of an emotional boost for this team. It looked like it was the complete opposite way around. I mean, Atlanta out to a 20-0 lead. Like I said, they were up 29-10 at halftime on the Cowboys. And a better third quarter, two short touchdown runs from Dak Prescott to get it back to a 5-point game, 29-24. And then Atlanta did have a 15-point lead with just under 8 minutes to go at 39-24. And here comes Dallas. I mean, just an unbelievable – I mean, when it made it 39-30, I thought, you know what? Being down 20-0, that would be a respectable score. It's still not good that Dallas is going to lose their home opener against a team like Atlanta. But nonetheless, 39-30, a little more respectful than it could have been at 20-0. Then all of a sudden, they get under 2 minutes. Dak Prescott again, a short run, 1 yard, and all of a sudden it's a 2-point game. Thinking, well, that's going to show a lot of fight. And then I'm thinking, you know, onside kick, probably not going to get it. Atlanta going to escape Dallas with a victory. And then the oddest onside kick I've seen in a while. I mean, if you're Atlanta, I get what you're trying to do. If the ball doesn't roll 10 yards, why chance it and try to pounce on it? Because if you try to pounce on it and you miss it, then it doesn't matter how far the ball goes, it's live. So then you pretty much give Dallas an easier chance to collect the ball on the onside kick. But when that thing is just creeping towards your 40-yard line or towards the 40-yard line, dude, just jump on it. Or the 45. Jump on it, man. I mean, at some point, when it gets to about 2 yards to where it needs to be for Dallas to legally touch it, at that point, who cares? Just pounce on it. I mean, if you're Atlanta, they're going to be kicking themselves and they watch that replay, because it is a tricky situation. The way that ball was just rolling towards the 45-yard line, just rolling and rolling towards it, you thought, I mean, I was waiting for Atlanta to pounce on it. So any minute now, somebody's going to fall on it and the game's going to be over. And then all of a sudden, it creeps past the 45, Dallas jumps on it, and they've got the ball with over 90 seconds left. And they put in this great drive, and then Greg Zuerlein, 46 yards out at the buzzer, steals one for Dallas. I mean, Dallas, there was a little bit of luck in that as well, but unbelievable comeback from the Cowboys there for the home opener this season. I mean, they really should have won that game by more, I feel like, over Atlanta. Maybe the Falcons are better than we thought, but I thought Dallas should have won that game a whole heck of a lot easier. But nonetheless, they did get the win, and it saves them from falling into an 0-2 start in what is already looking like another underwhelming season for the NFC East. But a strong performance there from Dallas. Again, Greg Zuerlein with that game-winning 46-yard field goal there as time expired. And then Green Bay and Detroit. Another game where the Packers got off to a little bit of a slow start and then picked it up again. They did that against Minnesota in week one, where the Vikings had that lead early on. But Green Bay then, just as the engine picks up pace, as they get going, just take over in the game against Minnesota. The same thing against Detroit here in week two, as they had a 14-3 lead at the end of the first quarter, did the Lions. And then here comes the Packers. I mean, the second and third quarter, Detroit held off the board, and the Green Bay Packers went to work in those two quarters, outscoring Detroit 31-0. So, again, a bit of a slow start, but Aaron Rodgers, again, two passing touchdowns there in the second quarter, one to Aaron Jones, one to Robert Tonyan. Then, of course, Aaron Jones with a solid 75-yard touchdown run there. Interception return for a touchdown as well from Green Bay. So they were getting some good production from the passing and running game and their defense, which, again, while I wasn't so much worried about their run game as I was about the chemistry between Rodgers and his wide receivers, and it looks like they've got some good rhythm and some good chemistry here early on in the season. Again, some slow starts, but another solid win there from Green Bay, who now go to 24-3 at home against Detroit since 1994. So some domination from Green Bay at home against Detroit, which is what I would expect. Green Bay, where they fall into some traps, is on the road. But at home, they're usually pretty solid. Indianapolis and Minnesota. Phillip Rivers gets his first win as a Colt. As they win 28-11 over the Vikings. A bad day for Minnesota. Again, some team dealing with some injuries, but Kirk Cousins, 11 of 26 for 113 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. Just got to be better than that if you're Kirk Cousins. And that's been my problem, is the consistency of Kirk. I mean, when he's on, he can make some fantastic throws, but you just really don't know what kind of Kirk Cousins is going to show up. And a very bad Kirk Cousins showed up against the Indianapolis Colts. Because it wasn't like the Colts were running away from the Vikings a lot. I mean, they got a lot of field goals. I mean, after the initial five-yard touchdown run from Jonathan Taylor that made it 7-3, they got a safety, and the next three scores were all field goals. So the Minnesota defense did a relatively good job of stopping Indianapolis. I mean, again, they only allowed two touchdowns in the game, but really it was that Vikings offense that was completely lacking from this game. And really, I thought it was on Kirk Cousins. And, I mean, he's got to be better. I mean, he got 63 yards from Dalvin Cook on the ground, but the passing game has to be better. It's just that's plain and simple in my mind. But Jonathan Taylor for the Indianapolis Colts, the first Colts rookie with 100-plus rushing yards since 2012. A strong showing from Jonathan Taylor, who in that game against Minnesota did have 26 carries, excuse me, for 101 yards and a touchdown, his long of 13 in this game. So, I mean, the old Wisconsin, I shouldn't say old, but the former Wisconsin running back, I mean, for a school that's pumped out a lot of good ones, had a strong showing there against Minnesota in that week two game. Then Bills and Dolphins, Miami hanging in there at home against the Buffalo Bills, but Josh Allen, career highs in passing yards with 417, passing touchdowns as well with four. Just did a fantastic job for Buffalo and looks like a young man that is ready to step up and take the AFC East by storm. And I'm starting to get more and more excited for a Buffalo-New England game. All right, this past Thursday was the most excited and interested I've ever been in a Cleveland-Cincinnati game. I think the first New England-Buffalo game of this year is the most I will have ever been interested in that matchup in my NFL fandom career as well. But my gosh, what a showing there from Buffalo. 31-28, not a bad showing from Miami either, but the Bills just able to find those big plays here and there. Stephon Diggs made some huge catches in this game for Buffalo. Good to see him out there having fun with Josh Allen. But this Buffalo team looking very for real, and can't wait to see that first matchup between them and the Patriots this season. But mention the 49ers and just them getting decimated with injuries. I mean, Garoppolo, Mostert, Sherman, Kittle, I mean, all these Bosa, all these guys that just go down for this team. I mean, this is a Niners team that is losing key player, it seems like, every other drive this season. They still managed to get a good win on the road, 7-1 now on the road all time against the New York Jets with this 31-13 victory. But how much did you lose if you're the Niners for in that game? I mean, the way Arizona's looked at the start of this season, the way LA's looked at the start of this season, the way that Seattle has looked at the start of this season, San Francisco cannot go and lose these type of primetime players. So, I mean, if you're San Francisco, hopefully, you know, you're not without these guys for too long. But if this is going to be the kind of bad luck that San Francisco has this year, it's going to be a rough year with the way the NFC West is looking. But nonetheless, they were able to get that win 31-13 over New York. The Jets continue to struggle. But Garoppolo, while he was playing, 14 of 16 for 131 yards and two touchdowns. Nick Mullins stepped in once Garoppolo went down. He went 8 for 11, although did have one interception on the day. So we'll see what San Francisco can do moving forward. But those are some huge losses for the Niners in this season, especially with the way the NFC West has been playing. Then Rams-Eagles, I mean, not much to say. Philly continues just to look relatively mediocre this season. I mean, I had such high expectations for that team. I thought this was a year where they can come out, maybe have a strong opening to the season, really take this division by storm. And they're sitting there 0-2, looking a little lost after blowing that 17-point lead to Washington. And the Rams looking good. Again, I mean, this is a team that, you know, I felt like could be competitive for a wild card spot, not necessarily maybe for the division, but for a wild card spot this year. But Jared Goff had a solid performance, 3 touchdowns on 20 of 27 passing for 267 yards. So some good performance from them there. They had an 81-yard performance on the ground from Darrell Henderson Jr. He also had a touchdown, as did Robert Woods in the rushing game. And then Tyler Higbee with 3 receiving touchdowns, a career high for him. So the Rams finding some good rhythm there offensively. And the Eagles, like I said, just continuing to look lost there. And then Denver put up a good fight against the Steelers. Denver just 0-2 for the fourth time since the 1970 merger. And they fought back against Pittsburgh there on the road. I mean, it looked like when the Steelers had a 26-14 victory, I thought that was going to be it. But Melvin Gordon, a nice 16-yard pass from Jeff Driskel, did a relatively nice job stepping in for Drew Lock when he went down, made it a 5-point game. But that Pittsburgh defense able to make some big plays when they needed it, and that offense again. Looking good. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, 29-41, 2 touchdowns, didn't have an interception. But James Conner, 106 yards with a touchdown, 16 carries. So some good performance from him on the ground for Pittsburgh. And really, I mean, the Steelers look like a team that's still finding their rhythm a little bit. But for the most part, they look strong. They look like they have some good rhythm on offense. Their defense has made some, you know, two really solid games to start this season against New York and Denver. And I mean, if you're the Steelers, you got to be feeling really good. And if you're Denver, I mean, it stinks to lose your quarterback and Drew Lock, but Jeff Driskel, I think, gives you a little bit of hope, you know, that you're not going to be completely lost. I mean, he looked okay out there against Pittsburgh. So maybe now with, you know, a full week of preparation, you know, you never know what you're going to get, but I don't think you're in as bad a position as you could be. But we'll see what happens there for Denver as they move forward without Drew Lock, at least for the next few weeks. Then the Buccaneers and the Panthers. Tom Brady getting his first win as a Buccaneer, 31-17 over Carolina. The second player in NFL history with 75,000 passing yards now is Tom Brady. But I thought it was a good performance from both teams. I thought, again, Carolina in this new era looked relatively good. Teddy Bridgewater, 33-42, unfortunately, the 2 interceptions. But, you know, I thought, again, with a team that lost Christian McCaffrey, they were able to hang in there against a Tampa Bay team that looked a lot better this week at home than they did last week on the road. But I think overall, not something that the Carolina should be worried about. I mean, they can be disappointed with the performance, but I think really for the first two games, they've been relatively competitive. And in a season where you have a brand new head coach and a brand new quarterback, that's really all you can ask for at the start is be competitive. So I think with some of these close loss last week against Vegas, at least kind of competing in this loss against Tampa Bay, they're making some good strides. It's just a slow process when you're playing in you know, against the top players and the top teams in the sport of you know, American football. So you just got to be, you know, patient as you start a new season with a new era. But I think Carolina looking relatively good here at the start of the season. I think they're in a position where they can make a nice turnaround. In the final morning game, the Jaguars and the Titans. Tennessee 2-0 for the first time since 2008. And Jacksonville, again, this was a game where Tennessee looked to be relatively in control. They had a 24-10 lead and a 30-17 lead towards the end of the third quarter. But Jacksonville just fighting back. Gardner Minshew with 2 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter, one to bring him within 7, one to tie it up. So Gardner Minshew continuing to show that he can really play. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do throughout this season. He's a fun kid to watch. So looking forward to that. I mean, the win against Indianapolis, I don't think anyone really saw coming. The fact that they took the Titans all the way to the end of the game, or almost to the end of the game, with Steven Gostkowski hitting the field goal with 1:36 to go to put him up 33-30. But ultimately, I think Jaguars have had a really strong start to the season. So looking forward to see what they can do as we continue to roll through this season. But that was the morning games. We'll talk a little about the afternoon games and Sunday Night Football coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Interesting couple of games in the afternoon yesterday. Arizona, again, just a solid performance from the Cardinals. 2-0 for the first time since 2015. And once again, what a showing from Kyler Murray. 26 of 38, did have a touchdown and an interception. But on top of that, 8 carries for 67 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. So 3 total touchdowns from Kyler Murray yesterday, and just a great performance from Arizona. They had a 20-0 lead at the half, and while they didn't have a great third quarter, they had a strong fourth quarter in that game. And again, a lot of fun to watch Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins together. That seems like a wide receiver quarterback duo that already has a fair amount of comfortability with one another, and they look to be on Right on the same page with some great rhythm here at the start of the season. So if those guys can stay healthy, which fingers crossed at this point, the way week two went, should be a fun year for Arizona. So looking forward to that. Baltimore, another strong performance against a floundering Texans team right now. But the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, 28 passing touchdowns and one interception in his last 9 regular season games. That's how good he's been. And there's a reason he's the reigning MVP of the league, because he has those kind of performances for Baltimore. He just goes out there and just transforms them into such a different team. But this Ravens team now 2-0, Texans 0-2, and looking a little lost here at the start of the season. So we'll see if they can turn it around. I mean, in the Ravens as your first 2 games of the season, not necessarily the easiest start. So we'll see how they can turn things around here. In the last 14 weeks of the season. But Chiefs and Chargers, a great performance from the Bolts. Justin Herbert told right before, you know, the game gets going that he's going to be the starter. He handles it absolutely perfectly. He looked calm out there. He took control of the offense. He was calling audibles. Just a few mistakes. Obviously, the interception, bit of a bummer. Would have liked to have seen him just run for that first down, keep the chains moving, keep the drive alive. That interception led to KC's touchdown, which ended up tying the game up after the 2-point conversion. But that, then, of course, the play down by the goal line where he turns the wrong way and a little off there with his running back. But again, for him to step in so short notice, have the game that he did. I mean, over 300 passing yards for Herbert. He ran for a touchdown and threw for a touchdown. I mean, the young man just had an absolutely incredible in the NFL for the Chargers. So I was a little bummed the Chiefs able to come back. I mean, Kansas City just being Kansas City. Mahomes was angry, dropping some F-bombs there on the sideline. And able to again do Kansas City things there and come back and win that game. And Harrison Butker, I mean, the penalty that moved it back from 53 to 58, the Chargers getting one of the most perfectly taken timeouts before a field goal that I've seen in a while. So for him to survive the 5-yard penalty, the late timeout, for him to step up on the third time of trying and hit really what was a third straight field goal. I mean, he made the 53 and he made the 58-yarder that didn't count. So really he made 3 straight 50-plus yarders there. So he deserved to get that one. He earned that one for Kansas City. But very impressed from the Chargers' debut there in SoFi Stadium. Very impressed from Justin Herbert. And I know that Anthony Lynn said that if Tyrod's 100%, he's still our guy. But I think Herbert made a strong statement that he could very well take over sooner rather than later for the Chargers there. And I would be all for that. And then what a Sunday night game between New England and Seattle. Cam Newton and the Patriots are for real. And nearly had the upset victory on the road before Seattle's defense able to step up and make a great goal line stop there in the last play of the game. But Russell Wilson, again, 9 passing touchdowns in his first 2 games this season. Cam Newton looking like a guy that is very capable and ready for leading this Patriots team. And Belichick seems to have a nice system sorted out for Cam Newton there in New England. But the Monday night game tonight, Saints-Raiders opening up Allegiant Stadium there in Las Vegas. Should be a fun game between the two. Looking forward to seeing what the Vegas Stadium looks like during a game. And can't wait to see. I mean, Sean Payton and Don Gruden very familiar with each other. So can't wait to see how those guys interact during before and after the game. But I think this should be a really fun game between these two teams. I think it's going to be relatively high scoring. I do think the Saints are going to barely edge out the Raiders, but looking forward to it. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.